Hi, I'm Bill Arnold. Thanks for listening to the podcast. A warm welcome to Afternoons with Bill Arnold. Thank you for joining me today. I hope the Thanksgiving weekend was good. We are back. It is Monday, and we're going to have an outstanding show for you. We're going to have Patrick Albanese with us in just a minute to help us ease us into Monday. Sometimes after a long weekend, you got to get eased back in. And then Ismael Hernandez will be joining us. He's going to talk about the 7 principles of effective compassion. It's going to be great. And then my friend and Bible scholar, Jeff Verdorn, will be with me in all of hour 2. We're going to talk about the keys to faith. That's going to be a great, great hour. But I want to welcome back to the studio Rebecca Maxwell Haney, who was gone for 6 weeks. And I first want to say Kim, who did the job in your place, was outstanding.
Isn't she great?
She's the best. And Carissa's always great, but
perpetually
great. But Kim, so thank you if you're listening. And Rebecca, welcome back.
Thank you, Bill.
So what were you doing the last 6 weeks?
Well, you know, I had some things to catch up on.
Like, for example?
I had a baby.
Oh, yeah. I heard about that.
There was that.
Yeah. Baby boy.
Yes.
Jeremiah
Lincoln.
Yeah. What does the Lincoln have to do? Where does that come from?
Well,
President Lincoln?
My husband's a huge Abraham Lincoln fan.
Oh, cool.
Civil War scholar and all of that. So we got to pick our first favorite names, and we kind of put them both mm-hmm. together. But that's the secret there.
Going by Jeremiah or J. Lincoln Haney?
Oh, that's a great idea.
It's not a bad idea.
I didn't
idea.
Think about that.
J. Lincoln's kind of cool.
I like that.
Yeah. You heard it from me.
I did.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's nice to have you back. We certainly missed you, and we missed everything about you, just so you know.
Well, that's so kind.
Your wit, your charm, everything you do in the studio is outstanding, so thank you.
Well, remember that when I forget which blinking light to press first.
Yeah, I mean, you're confused
it's been
by
a while.
The panel of lights ahead of you.
Yes, but yeah. I think I can get the hang of it, but thanks in advance for your grace.
It does not disturb me that you have those feelings. It's like when you walk in an airplane, though, and you go by the cockpit and you hear the pilot going, whoa, whoa, all these dials and gauges. That's when you get alarmed.
That's
you
true.
Pushing buttons here, that
That's
doesn't
true.
Concern
we're
me.
We're not at 30,000
feet. No, we're not. We're not. We're on the ground.
I love my job. I'm glad to be back. I love my little guy more. But
I get it. I am
dealing. And I think a lot of the working moms out there have had to go through that. So
of course.
It's nice to be back, too.
You've been pretty good today. Pretty cheerful.
Thank you.
A little teary-eyed maybe once, but not around me.
Right.
Yeah.
Because I know that would disturb you. That's what you don't want from your pilot.
Right. Exactly. Crying. All right. Let's take a little break. When we come back, my friend and colleague Patrick Albanese will be with us.
The month of November is often associated with Thanksgiving. And here at Faith Radio, we want to take the opportunity to say thanks to you for listening, praying, and supporting. I'm Neil Stavem, Program Director for the Faith Radio Network, and I want to let you know that your gifts make this ministry possible. The relevant Bible preaching, the family-focused teaching, the interactive talk programming comes your way each day because of listeners partnering with us consistently month in and month out. So thank you for your faithfulness. And if you've yet to join our support team, or you want to make a gift this month to express your thankfulness for the encouragement and hope you receive every day, connect with us online at myfaithradio.com or call 877-933-2484 and press 2 to make a gift. Thank you again for your support. We're grateful for you, and may this season be full of reminders of God's goodness to you and your family.
What would you do with a brain if you had one?
Do? Why, if I had a brain, I could
while away the hours, conferring with the flowers, consulting with the rain. And my head, I'd be scratching while my thoughts were busy hatching if I only had a brain. I'd unravel every riddle for any individual in trouble or in pain.
With the thoughts you'd be thinking, you could be another Lincoln if you only had a brain.
Oh,
All right, welcome back to the show. I have on our studio line Patrick Albanese, my friend and colleague from prestigious West Des Moines. We will do our best to solve all world problems in now under 22 minutes. Patrick, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Today, with an extra dose of prestigiousness.
I agree. I gave you a little bit of extra prestigiousness today. Well, I don't know why. So I don't know why.
We had a holiday recently. We're all stuffed. So I'm feeling prestigious today.
Good.
I don't
good.
Know why.
Yeah. Did you get the Des Moines storm? Did it hit with intensity?
Well, no.
Oh,
it didn't hit. It didn't hit very intensely at all. And my wife should be a weather forecaster because 3 days ago she says it'll be nothing. It'll be nothing.
Oh, weird.
It'll be nothing. She said we'll be lucky to get an inch of snow. I doubt we'll even get that. And I'm looking at this monster that's bearing down on us. And I say, well, you know, all the forecasters say it's coming. She says, eh. She's right every time. She can look. I don't even know how she knows all this stuff. I assume I must have had a very poor public school education compared to hers, because she knows everything about history. But she can look at a cloud. She goes, well, you see that way that cloud formation is. Like, what cloud formation?
What? I don't get it.
She says, well, you see the way that it's going up there. That's the thing that's gathering the water that's going to be dumping on us. Oh, that'll dump to the southeast. Who?
What?
My school didn't teach us much.
No.
I don't think it taught me anything.
No. Next you're going to tell me she can warm up your coffee with just her mind.
Well, actually, you know, occasionally, you know, she's always so sweet to me, but occasionally I think she insults me in her sleep.
How's that work out?
Well, it's, you know, it'll be the middle of the night and I'll hear this. You left the coffee maker on. You left the coffee maker on. I guess I'm being corrected in my sleep.
All right,
but to her knowledge, she's never said a nasty thing to me. Yeah.
Let's rehash a little bit of Thanksgiving event and how it was for you and your family. Did you avoid having conversations about things political and possibly what else got avoided?
We avoided each other, and it worked out fantastically. No, we did. We avoided all political things. And it's not that we went to my wife's. We spent it with her family. My family's in all different cities. And it's not that they're not political, but they're quiet about it. You know, if somebody were to start that topic, I think everybody would jump in and say, take that to a corner. If the two of you over there want to talk about something, you don't spoil everybody else's Thanksgiving. And I highly recommend this approach.
Yeah, I like it. You know, Thanksgiving is filled with obviously gratitude towards God to all that he provides. Usually then the gathering of families and friends and good meals and then sports. And one thing I do find interesting is the politicalization of sports. And it's interesting that ESPN of all, networks have gone so political to the point that they've only lost 2 million subscribers.
Yeah, I don't. And that's not just because people's credit cards expired and they didn't know how to figure out the website. Currently, something I'm going through right now is a credit card expired, and I said, boy, I have a lot of monthly payments on things, and I'm getting stuff, you know, turned off. I think the ESPN thing is deliberate cancellations, but plus the political, you say, I used to go to sports. I thought that the popularity in sports was starting to happen because Hollywood was becoming so cliche and trite that you could figure out the ending to every show. You could figure out every plot twist. You could figure it all out. And the only surprises left on television were sporting events where you say, I really don't know the outcome. I have an idea, but I could be surprised.
Yeah.
And it was also a place you could go to get away from life. You know, it was relaxing, and politics is not relaxing. And then they had to go and get political.
Yeah.
And I don't understand the desire to do this at all.
I want to hear analysis of the Chicago Bears nickel defense, not what Mitchell Trubisky, the quarterback of Chicago, thinks of President Trump.
Yeah, I agree. You know, I'm particularly interested in what kind of a name is Trubisky.
Exactly.
You know, that's a Chicago name.
Yeah.
I think I grew up with a lot of Trubiskys. Yeah, I don't particularly care. I remember it was maybe in the last 8 years or so when Bob Costas, who I used to enjoy, I said he's gotten onto my list where if he's on something, I go, you know, he's going to throw something in. He would do it during the Olympics, and I said, oh, come on, I'm watching curling.
Exactly.
Which means I'm trying to get to sleep here.
Right. Right. They're so busy trying to sweep that little area in front of the curling, whatever the thing is called. What is
it's
it called?
A flat bowling ball. I don't know. It's a hunk of iron. I don't even know what it's made of.
But they're sweeping real fast in front of it, and I bet those guys don't want to sweep the kitchen at the floor of their house. You know, it's just, it doesn't work.
Right. Well, if they do, there's just one clean path in the middle of the kitchen. All the dirt is swept to the side.
Yeah. Now, sadly enough, the statistic that came out that said alcohol now actually kills more of us than opioids do.
Yeah, it doesn't surprise me, and I'm not exactly sure you want to declare a winner in this contest.
There is no winner. Let me just read a statistic. It says that about 72,000 people die per year from opioid abuse, while 88,000 die from alcohol and its related causes. Now, we've got, of course, the Thanksgiving weekend we just got through, and we look to the holidays, and holidays are always seems to be a time where there's more opportunities for people indulging. And if you have a friend, a relative, a spouse that leans that direction, it's not always a pleasant way to be spending the holidays.
No, and, you know, unfortunately, I think there's not a person that can hear us. Well, if they can't, then they're missing a lot of good stuff. But, I mean, there's not a person out there within the sound of our voices that might not – That isn't affected probably in some way personally by this, that knows somebody, a friend, a family member. And, you know, I was telling some friends yesterday about a friend of mine who died a number of years ago, you know, in his early 50s of what they labeled as natural causes. And I said, well, you know, I knew the guy well enough to know that it was not natural, mm-hmm. his consumption. And so, you know, that might not be one of those statistics that would go under alcohol abuse, for instance. But because they put down his, you know, cause of death as natural causes, I said, no, he drank himself to death. Mm-hmm. You know, it may not have been apparent at that exact moment that they found him, but he destroyed the temple, and it didn't last as long. You know, it gave up before the manufacturer's warranty was up.
Yeah, just... I mean, what happens when you violate God's design? It always results in bad outcomes.
Yeah, isn't that interesting, too, that, you know, people can look at, like, biblical suggestions. Let's call them suggestions for the time being.
Although they're commands, but go ahead.
I understand. Commandments, yeah. Suggestions, you know, that's like your mother said, take out the garbage. Is that a suggestion?
No, that was a command.
That was a command.
Yeah.
But, you know, if you were to say, well, gosh, let's not look at these as, you know, things that, you know, God's up there angrily pointing a finger and saying, thou shalt not. What if part of all of these commandments and suggestions are for our own good?
Mm-hmm.
Do people stop to think, wait a second. Okay, let me follow some of these. Wow. Hey, I'm living a healthier, happier life.
Yeah.
What an amazing thing. Yeah. God's delivering here. This isn't just about delivering in the future in a heavenly context. It's like, guess what? I can deliver the goods right here, right now, mm-hmm. if you follow.
Yeah. Well, we seem to be not paying attention to what God's design is often when you see the sin and trouble in the world. And we, you know, we violate God's design, we pay consequences. That's just all there is to it.
I know, but isn't it amazing that, you know, God gives us these, he gives us this design, we violate it, then we get mad at him.
That's Proverbs 19:3. A man will blow up his own life and then be angry at God.
Yeah. You know, it's got to be rough to be God some days.
I don't think so.
Well, that's true. But, you know, let's just say that us humans would struggle with the, are you kidding me?
Yeah.
Are you kidding me?
Yeah, we lay out all this beautiful stuff for our children, and then the children don't obey it, and then they get in trouble. And I get where you're going, that a father's heart would break to see that. Yeah. And it does break God's heart to see us wander off in our own sin, as he cannot tolerate sin.
Right. And then they blame the parent.
Yeah. Let me take a little break. Patrick Albanese is my guest, my friend and colleague from prestigious West Des Moines. I'll take a short break and be right back. Welcome back to the show. If you are just joining me, happy Monday. And I've got Patrick Albanese on the studio line. We are chatting about what went on over Thanksgiving weekend, and we're now looking ahead to the big Christmas holidays, which are coming up in just about a month. And Patrick, as I was looking over some of the news items that went on over the weekend, because I kind of ignored news, to be honest. I think you did, too. And I think you're a happier person, aren't you?
It really does work. And I don't know if that's a level of ignorance. I used to like to consume so much news because I would say, I just need to be informed. It makes me feel smart. It makes me feel this. But, you know, sometimes when you're around people of varying opinions and they get their news from other sources and you realize that, we're not even agreeing on things. So somebody's being lied to. One of us is being lied to. Maybe both of us are being lied to. Maybe all of us are being manipulated just to buy newspapers and visit websites.
Mm-hmm.
And people that are purveying this stuff don't particularly care about our well-being. Maybe there's some of that in there, too.
Mm-hmm.
And if you say, well, how about if I just reject their offerings for a couple of days, and you say, I kind of feel better and the world didn't fall apart. Ooh, gosh, yeah. Maybe I should a little bit more of this, just a little bit
yeah.
more.
I had a friend who was part of a pretty big news story here in the Twin Cities, and it ended up getting picked up nationally. And he showed me a story on him in a very well-known national magazine. And I said, well, did this reporter contact you? Did this reporter interview you? And he said, well, no, not at all. She just sort of cut and pasted other pieces of information from other news sources and put it in an article. So I said, she never actually spoke to you. And he said, no. I said, well, how much of the story is true? He said, none of it.
Oh, my gosh.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it used to be a joke, the story is too good to check.
Right.
Because if you check, you might have to squish the story, if that's even a term. You can, squelch.
Squelch, yeah.
Yeah, so it does seem to be that it's just, the old, it's easier to get forgiveness than permission, and why call and find out the truth when you can run with the lie, get a bunch of clicks. The problem is that we now get these outrage mobs that start screaming for people's heads on platters, and if you're doing that and it's based on false information, ouch, oh, that's so disturbing.
Yeah. Sadly, I've lost a lot of interest because of what I believe is a complete lack of integrity in reporting. There's, a couple of places I still like to go and read news, but so many of the stories I read, I think to myself, is this true? Can I believe this, or should I just pass?
Yeah.
Hard to tell.
Oh, I was struggling with highlights for children the other day. I just said, really? This word jumble, that's all wrong.
Yeah.
No, I agree with you. It's even places that I said, okay, these are what I used to feel were my trusted sources. And then I said, well, why do I trust them? Is it just because it's a confirmation bias thing that I say, well, they lean the way that I lean.
Mm-hmm.
And I like some of their reporting. It seems to agree with how I perceive the world. So I now trust them. I said, mm-hmm. Well, that's an odd way to just, distribute the trust, just by virtue of the fact that the person says, hey, I'm like you. That's isn't that how all those TV commercials go? I was just like you.
Yeah, that's how it always goes.
Mm-hmm. And I said, well, maybe they don't deserve my trust just yet. Maybe I shouldn't be calling them a trusted news source. Maybe I should, I have a 48-hour kind of a fudge rule.
I like that. Explain to my listeners what that is.
Oh, a news story comes out and you say, you got to give it a full 48 hours for the rest of the facts to come out. It used to be 24. And thanks to the internet, sometimes these things get blown up within minutes and somebody says that you got the wrong thing here. There was, I'll give you an example. This Michael Cohen, one of Trump's attorneys, they had discovered that Michael Cohen was in Prague. This is an old story. This is maybe 2 years old. And it's like, oh, my gosh, there was a Michael Cohen. Michael Cohen was in Prague, and that's the Russian connection, and we got the smoking gun, and Trump's going down, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And, then finally, after the story ran for 2 days, somebody contacted Michael Cohen, and he said, never been there, never been to check my passport, never been in my life.
Yeah.
And so sure enough, they did a little bit more due diligence, and they said, gosh, you're not going to believe this. There are two guys named Michael Cohen. No, actually, hundreds of guys named Michael Cohen, and we had the wrong one.
Yeah.
Well, and you say, okay, so days of outrage over nothing.
Yeah. I love the story of the playwright that had this, would write plays, and he'd go into cities, and he would just look up in the phone book a guy named Rex Reed. And then he would invite him to the show and say, just I want you to, you know, if you like the show, just tell me you like the show. And then the next day, sure enough, in the ad, love the show, Rex Reed.
Yeah. It's not a, not exactly the real Rex
not
Reed.
Not the real Rex Reed.
It is a Rex Reed.
Yeah. Yeah. So when you hear about the economy is seeming to do good and the sales around, you know, the last Friday was booming and I think they, you know, it was $1 trillion of purchases people made. And then I open up the newspaper this morning and General Motors is going to cut production at plants and reduce their workforce by 15%. I go, is that because their product is not as desirable or people are buying other products or is the economy not as great as we hear it? Or how do you connect those dots?
I don't know. I mean, my feeling, especially with the news, is that if there's anything bad about the economy, they want it reported because a lot of them would like to say, see, Trump's bad. You know, I remember this every time gas, when George Bush was president, every time gas went up, you know, 20 cents, they'd say, Bush, bad, look what he did. And, you know, when Obama was president, if it went down a half a penny, they'd say, he's a genius.
Yeah.
You say, well, you know, I don't know if these guys have as much effect on gas prices as everybody would like to believe. And you can give them credits for raising, you know, for lowering gas prices or raising them. And it's going to be, you know, one way or the other, but I think companies like General Motors, it's, you know, companies are going to come and go. I don't want to make it sound so cold and callous, but if the economy is humming in some areas and then your particular industry is not doing so well, is it that your industry is suffering? Is it the economy as a whole? Or maybe your company, you know, I mean, GM got the bailout. Chrysler got a bailout. Ford ignored the bailout and decided to try and save themselves. And then they changed how they marketed. They changed how they built their cars. And then, as I recall, their sales went through the roof. And people were like, these Ford cars are something great. You know, the only GM experience I have of late is the woman who cut my hair today said, the leather in my Malibu is tearing unbelievably every time I sit in it. Mm. I don't know if that's a quality product or I ate too much of a Thanksgiving product.
Or that's a really old car. But anyway, that's – yeah. Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't know if I want to just, you know, from one company, you know – I mean, in our – it's funny. We've had those companies in our lifetime, the Netscape. Yeah, you're going, oh, that's right. That was one of those companies that was huge and then disappeared.
That's
IBM.
True.
We grew up on IBM.
Yeah, that's true.
Back when the Ice Age was coming.
Right.
And then, you know, they're still a huge company, but you say, well, they're not Big Blue anymore. You know, it's like IBM was the only company you talked about. Now you talk about Microsoft and
that's
Facebook.
True.
And
yeah, yeah.
Twitter.
Yeah. Everything has its season, doesn't it? Patrick.
So do we.
Yeah, I know. Our season just ended just now. Thanks for being on the show. Have a great week, and I will talk to you again next week.
All right. Bye.
Yep. Patrick Albanese has been my guest. We'll take a very short break and be back with lots more. Welcome back to the show. It is 31 minutes after the hour. My guest, Ismael Hernandez, is the founder of the Freedom and Virtue Institute, committed to individual liberty, human dignity, and self-reliance. He's a native of Puerto Rico, a former communist, and an inner-city ministry worker. And for all I know, he probably knows how to make baked Alaska, because he kind of does everything well. Ismael, welcome back to the show.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be with you again.
Yeah, I had such a great time talking to you last time. Your story is absolutely riveting, and I love it. And I wanted to talk today about the 7 principles of effective compassion, because there's lots to learn, and you're going to help us.
Wonderful.
Where do we start?
Well, the first place to start, I think, is to understand what compassion is.
Love it.
Sometimes Christians confuse compassion with feeling sorry for people.
Uh-huh.
We're sorry for people, and we dump free stuff at them. And so compassion is merely a transaction. You know, you have some things and you deprive yourself of those things and pass them to someone else. But in reality, the word compassion in a Christian context means to be there with the one who suffers.
Okay.
That's what it means, compassion, with suffering. So we are there to experience suffering alongside the poor, to walk a journey with them, but not for them, because they, being made in the image and likeness of God with the moral capacity of self-realization, have the duty of living out their own existence.
Mm-hmm.
With the capacities that God gave them. We are there to work with them side by side. And to do that, it takes being very concerted and very intentional and understanding certain principles that are going to motivate and be the foundation for action.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very difficult for Christians sometimes to step aside and allow for people to do for themselves. We have this savior complex, you know?
Yeah, we want to rescue people, don't we?
Exactly. And,
yeah.
And we have to be careful with that. So Marvin Olasky, the great thinker, evangelical thinker that is the president and of World Magazine, years ago wrote a book, The Tragedy of American Compassion, and he developed, made the research to find out how Christians 100 years ago, 150 years ago, how they helped the poor, what we can learn from our history of Christian love for the poor, and he found certain principles that I think that in many ways we have forgotten, and those are what we can call the seven principles of effective compassion.
Mm-hmm. Well expressed. I love it. Let's talk about principle number two, which I believe is bonding, which is
yes.
Being able to help one person at a time.
You know, one of the great tragedies of Christianity today is that many churches want to see the big number. You know, we want to see that we help 10,000 people, that we distribute 20,000 bags of food, and we basically we forgot the human person in front of us. You know? We look at this mirage of people, these great numbers, and that does not help us because it gives us an illusion of success. Because we have supposedly helped so many, and we can give people the numbers of how many people benefited or supposedly benefited from some transaction. We have this illusion that we are really helping people.
Mm-hmm.
But in reality, the Christian life is about loving people. And you can only love people you really know. And you can only love, only people can love people. Institutions don't love people. Governments, corporations, bureaucracies don't love people. Only people love people. So we need to bond with people. We need to get to know the other. And out of that experience of closeness comes the necessary information on how to actually effectively help people. Out of the friendship, out of this relationship comes the knowledge of what is the deeper human need, not the apparent need. Sometimes people come, you know, for a bag of food, but that's really not what they need.
Mm-hmm.
And how are you going to know that unless you have a relationship with that individual?
Mm-hmm.
So bonding is this idea that it's better to help a few people the right way than to help many, many, many people the wrong way. And if you think about it, the welfare state is about numbers. You go to a welfare state office, they ask you what's your number and how much you make. Here's the check. Mm-hmm. So we have to be careful with this bureaucratization and depersonalization of love, the depersonalization of care for the poor, and only loving people. You know, in my church, just last Sunday, I took a picture of a Christmas tree we put in the back of the church. And in the Christmas tree, there's a piece of paper. I took the picture. A girl of 10 years old needs X and Y. Bring it next Sunday. You don't know that child. You don't want to know that child. You just want to bring the stuff and feel good for yourself. And that is not compassion. That is not compassion. Mm-hmm. You need to know who this person is. It did not even have a name. You cannot even pray for that person using the name of that person.
Mm-hmm.
And bonding helps us to connect with real flesh human beings.
Ismael, so is the mentality today that I want to do great things for God, and that means there has to be great numbers, because that would suggest to the world that I'm doing great things, and we're missing the boat a little bit?
Absolutely. And if you think about it, what you just described is all about me. It's all about how I feel and how I stand before God. I thought that the care of the poor is supposed to be about them. It's mm-hmm. supposed to be about how we help them. But many times we instrumentalize the poor to feel good about our situation with God. It's not intentional. I don't think it's intentional. It's just the way we have created and structured systems of care and the way our society is moving. And this idea of, for example, entitlement, this idea of being victims of forces outside of our control.
Mm-hmm.
It happens with Christians that we see ourselves as incapable of doing more than just dumping stuff at other people. And we need to challenge that false understanding of the human person and the false understanding of what compassion is.
You know,
Christ went around walking, touching people, talking with people, encountering people. He did not go to create some kind of bureaucracy to help the poor.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I am not interested in alleviating the poverty of the poor. I'm not interested in that. You know what I'm interested in? In seeing people flourish.
Yes.
And when people flourish as human beings, poverty is taken care of.
I agree. I agree. There you go, making sense again, Ismael.
but you know, what excites me is that is seeing people engage in productive work.
Yes.
Engage in ministry, engage with others, that they are excited about going out there and making things happen for themselves.
Mm-hmm.
That is really respecting people. What
yeah.
we need is stop feeling sorry for people and start respecting them.
Mm-hmm.
And when we do that, we see them eye to eye as complete human beings, made in God's image, destined for greatness, not destined for being a sorry bunch, always in need of some paternalistic help from us.
Yeah. I'm talking to Ismael Hernandez, founder of the Freedom and Virtue Institute. He's a native of Puerto Rico, and we're talking about the 7 principles of effective compassion. And I'd like to talk now, Ismael, if I can, about, you know, this is kind of a piggyback from the last one, but just treating each person individually.
Exactly. As we were discussing, individuals are that. We are created by God as individuals. God calls us by our name. He knows even how many hairs we have in our head.
Mm-hmm.
He expects of us to use the talents he bestowed on us when he created us. And he calls us to be what we are destined to be in him. So when we treat people as individuals, we are recognizing that, again, that moral capacity they have. Why is that? Because they have a double capacity of reason and choice. They can know what is true they can do what is good. And in that moral capacity lies our dignity and our image of God.
Mm-hmm.
And that is important. You know, the same happens with race. We talk about blacks and whites. Well, what are you saying? You're not saying anything. You're talking about labels, poor and rich, black and white, are not people. They are just labels, and labels that carry with them certain assumptions. And so we go on making assumptions about people because we have boxed them into these collectivist, meaningless labels, these groups.
I need to repent of that sin because I've done that myself.
Yeah, we have all done that. You know, we have all done that. I remember being in my ministry desk one day years ago, and it dawned on me that I saw the line of people coming for food. And I began to see the children of those I have given food to for a long time themselves coming for food. I did not know who they were. And I realized at that moment that I was part of the problem. I was not part of the solution. And the church has to get some courage that we are losing to say enough of this. We are going to change the way we are. That's what I don't believe in, receiving government funding. Ministries and churches should not receive any government funding. We should make a choice. Are we the higher hand of the state, or are we faithful Christians present among the poor, suffering with them, getting to know them, treating them as individual persons capable of changing their lives by the choices they make? Or if we don't believe in that, just get out of this business.
Mm-hmm.
You should not be in the care of the poor.
Yeah. Ismail, I want to take a little break. When I come back, I want to kind of continue the discussion. You said, be a good steward, give responsibly, demand responsibly. When we come back, we'll pick up right there. Ismail Hernandez is my guest. We'll take a short break and be right back. Thank you for listening. It is 14 minutes till the top of the hour. Ismail Hernandez is my guest on our studio line. We're talking about the 7 principles of effective compassion. And right before we went to break, I was wanted to ask him about discernment. So we want to be a good steward, give responsibly, but demand responsibly. Would you explain that to me, Ismail?
Yeah, discernment, the best way I can explain this to you is intelligent giving, intelligent withholding. Sometimes we have to sit down and wait and pray and assess and look and ask, what is the best way to help people in these circumstances of the here and now? Years ago, I remember this Haitian guy who came to our ministry asking for money for a few days in a motel because he was homeless. He was crying, and I felt I wanted to give him 6 months of rent somewhere. But something inside of me told me to wait. Eventually, we discovered that the man had been kicked out of 2 homeless shelters for misbehavior, and even his own family did not want him at home because he used drugs and did not respect the parents. Mm-hmm. In other words, if I would have given that person money at that time, I would have assisted him in his sin because I did not discern what was the right thing to do in this moment. Sometimes people need support. Sometimes they need a hug. Sometimes they need food. Sometimes they need a job. And sometimes they need a good kick on the rear to wake up and begin to change their lives. So discernment is that capacity of waiting, of examining, of looking at how is the best way to help in this particular circumstance. And don't really simply assume that the only way to help people is to give them food, pay their bills, and give them shelter. You know, sometimes we treat the poor as we treat our pets. We put a bowl of food there, and the pet goes every day, and he eats his food, and we pat the pet on the head, makes us feel good, and we assume that that's all what they need. But we are more than animals. We are human beings made in the image and likeness of God. Mm-hmm. We have existential and spiritual needs, and we also have responsibilities. You know, one of the things I hate is, you know, you go to a ministry, people ask, well, how may I help you? Why don't we ask them before, you know, and greet them, tell them, you know, I'm so glad to see you here. We need you. That changes the exercise. That gives the person the idea that they have something to offer.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of always being in the long lines of dependency, waiting for someone to meet their needs. And they become passive recipients of magnanimity instead of becoming active participants in lives built by themselves. You know? And that is what discernment is that capacity of waiting, of examining, and to act with courage according to the real needs of people.
Mm. Ismael, it's like every word you say is important.
Oh, thank you, my friend. It's not really me. It's in the history of our Christian faith.
No, of course.
We have forgotten this idea.
Of course.
It's so sad that we have forgotten. You know, 100 years ago, you were able-bodied man who went to a place for help, and the Christians will give them an axe and tell them, you know, go and cut some wood.
Right.
And let me see what you are made of. Or you will go to a soup kitchen and, you know, they will make the food intentionally not taste that good because they wanted you to hate that condition.
Uh-huh.
We will feed you, but we want you to hate this situation so you rise up and take yourself away from it. We want you to live out the full meaning of what it means to be human. And that it only happens when we challenge people.
Mm-hmm.
We have a program, you know, we have spoken about that before. It's called Effective Compassion Training, where we examine these principles and we help ministers, churches, and nonprofits begin to change the way they help the poor. So that's an offering. I did not want to miss the opportunity to offer to churches and nonprofits and ministries. If they want to go through our training, they will see how these principles can really help your ministry become truly effective.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting. I want to go to the training. So let's talk about the importance of work. I mean, we have to have work into the equation because that's what eliminates poverty, right?
Absolutely. Work is what, number one, engages people in meaningful activity. It really kills this sloth. You know, our lives is a daily fight between inclination and obligation. And it's so easy to respond to the lower inclinations of our bodies and simply go for our appetites.
Mm-hmm.
And for the easy way out. But work engages us as productive individuals, as people who mirror our Creator because we are co-creators. We can put our hands in reality and we can create something that wasn't there before. You know, the great inventions of today that benefit our lives were created because we had created a space for people to be productive. That's what I believe in the market economy. The market economy is the contest of law and opportunity that allows people to engage in productive, meaningful work and create wealth. And that is the question. The question is not what is poverty. The question is how wealth is created. And when people begin to understand how wealth is created, and we give them the opportunity to become creators of wealth, people create. That's the thing. We get what we create an incentive for. And don't blame the poor for responding to the incentives of the welfare state. They have needs.
Mm-hmm.
And you tell me that you're going to take care of me, I let you. Because I have problems, I have situations, I have needs. But I am convinced that if we incentivize work, we get working people.
Mm-hmm.
If we incentivize poverty, we get poor people. 62% of churches in America give food away. Only 4% of churches have any kind of program that engages the poor in meaningful, productive work.
Wow, that's staggering.
That should make us think.
Yeah.
That is staggering.
That's staggering.
I don't say stop giving food. I say flip the chart.
Right.
Flip it, you know, and you will see radical change in America
mm-hmm.
when Christians begin to mobilize themselves to help people get productive work.
Yeah. Ismail, I got started talking about the seven principles of effective compassion, and now with just
yes.
2 minutes left, we've still got two principles
yes.
to go. So I didn't
yeah.
budget my time very well. So I want to start with first letting our listeners know where they might get more information about this training. If I'm a church and I'm thinking, I would like to get trained in this way, how would I go about finding out more?
They can go to our website, fvinstitute.org,
mm-hmm.
and they can click and let us know that they want, that there is a link to our training.
Yes.
And we can discuss on how to bring the training to your area. It's been going all over the country. Sometimes even Dr. Olasky joins me to do
nice.
The training, which is wonderful. And we would love to bring this training to the Minneapolis area.
Yeah.
We also have a program for children where they can earn money through work to buy the school supplies, and that's going all over the country also.
Nice.
And so they can go to our website.
Yeah. Let me just let our listeners know. F is for freedom, V for virtue, fvinstitute.org.
Yes.
And the very seven principles that we're talking about today are all listed on an article on this website. Because I with the minute left, let's just, the seventh principle, of course, is meeting the spiritual needs as well as the physical needs.
Yes. You want me to list them?
No. I don't know if we have time, but just talk about how God comes in, you know, how important the spiritual needs are as well as the physical needs. We've just got a minute left.
Human beings, we can be very self-centered. And what makes us get away from ourselves and take ourselves less serious, knowing that there is something greater than ourselves?
Mm-hmm.
And because we are spiritual human, we are spiritual beings. If we don't take into consideration the spiritual aspect of the person, how can we really help people? So God is essential in poverty, fighting poverty.
Fantastic, Ismail. You are a delightful guest, and thank you for everything you brought to us today. You've given us a lot to think about, and you've articulated it so well. And I, again, want to let the listeners know to fvinstitute.org is where you can learn more information. And also you can hear about the seven principles of effective compassion that we were chatting about today. You can read that article on your own if you like. Ismail Hernandez has been my guest. Thank you so much, Ismail. And we'll love
Thank
to have you,
you
back
friend.
On again if that would be all right with you.
Anytime.
Good. Well, trust me, I'll take you up on that. All right, we'll take a little break. When we come back, that wraps up hour one. Hour two is Jeff Verdorn in studio for the whole hour. Talk about the keys to faith. Be back in a minute. Thanks for listening. Programming like this is made available through your support. Information available at myfaithradio.com.